Hi there, and welcome to Frollo, the Single Parent Podcast. I'm your host, Zoe Desmond, single parent and founder of Frollo, the single parent community app. Frollo is all about empowering the single parent experience through friendship, community, and support. And this podcast brings you conversations with other single parents about their experiences and the challenges and rewards that go hand in hand with raising a child by yourself. There are so many different aspects to single parenting, and I think it's about time we put a more positive spin on the term single parent, because one thing is for sure, single parents are truly incredible. I hope you enjoy this episode of Frollo, the Single Parent Podcast. Hello and welcome to today's episode of the Frollo Podcast. Today I'm joined by Karen Sutton, who is a grief and loss coach specializing in widowhood. Karen, welcome to the Frollo Podcast. Thank you so much for being here.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
Oh, I know you did a Q&A on the Frollo app recently and it went down really, really well. We got a lot of positive feedback for it and I know it was turned into a blog post then. So thank you so much for that. Yeah. And thanks for joining us again.
Lovely. Thank you.
So Karen, can I get some kind of background on you? So obviously, you are a grief and loss coach specializing in widowhood, and that kind of journey came out of your own experience because you lost your husband, Simon, in 2016.
Yes, that's right. Yes, it was September, the 11th of September, 2016. These dates stay with you forever, don't they? And, you know, just a normal family. I was a midwife at the time and, you know, I was 39. My husband was 43. We still have two girls. They were 9 and 5. And it was just a normal Sunday morning. We'd had some friends around the day before, had a few beers. They were all a bit hungover and jaded. And Simon went off out on his normal sort of 4-hour bike ride with his friend. I sort of remember mocking him on the way out, like, how are you going to do that? I couldn't get my head off a pillow. I was like, oh. So he went off and that was it. That was the last time I ever saw him. He was on the bike ride with his friend. He pulled over and his friend kind of said, oh, come on, you know, stop being so lazy, get on with it. And he said, oh, hang on a minute, mate. And the next thing, you know, his friend knew that he literally just collapsed. And Mark, the guy he was with, said, I could tell just the way he fell off the bike onto the grass verge. It wasn't normal, do you know? And I literally think he dropped down dead. He had a cardiac arrest. Luckily, a doctor was passing by, so CPR was started straight away. How that was happened, I don't know, because they were in the middle of nowhere. And then, you know, they got the ambulance and the air ambulance out and all sorts. And they tried to resuscitate him for an hour and didn't get anything. And you know, on post-mortem, it showed he had, blocked arteries, basically.
Wow.
So whether he had his arteries already blocked, so whether he had a blood clot that just blocked off what was left or a bit of plaque from his arteries got dislodged, they didn't know. But that was it. And the first I knew of it was when his friend Mark, bless him, he came to my house and told me that Simon had died. And wow, you know, just how do you process that kind of information? Somebody leaves to go on a bike ride, but they don't come home. And you automatically go into this kind of, oh, I need to protect the children. I don't want to tell them. I'm just going to tell them he's had an accident. And, you know, all this stuff starts going through your mind that is completely illogical. And you don't know what you're doing. Luckily, the two policemen that were with Mark at the time that had gone to the scene, they were really lovely, actually. And one of them said to me, don't lie to your children, because you're going to get yourself into something you won't know how to get out of. In my mind, I was going to tell them that daddy'd had an accident and he was in hospital, and I was going to go and see him in hospital. I don't know why I was going to do that, but that was what was in my mind at the time. And like I say, I was sort of advised not to do that, and I didn't. And I did tell them the truth. I had to tell them that their dad had died. I then had to go and tell my mother-in-law her son had died. From that point on, it is just chaotic, overwhelming. You're full of fear, anxiety, utter devastation, the despair. It's really hard to explain and put it into words how awful it actually feels to lose someone like that.
I can't even imagine. But I have actually recently enough kind of been very close to it. Mm. I have a friend of mine, Emma, who was 40, passed away very suddenly at the end of December. Oh. And she's three young girls, 4, 6, and 8. And just here and full of life 1 minute and gone the next. And I was very in close proximity. We were actually away just before Christmas. So I was around the situation when it happened. And I've never experienced that, being, you know, seeing a family, you know, go through obviously, you know, it's kind of, yeah, separately, there was a grieving thing going on for me with my friend, but just seeing the family and how her husband and telling the kids and the way the different kids and, you know, their ages responded, and just unimaginable. I can't imagine what you, when you got the news, like, were you in shock? Were you in denial? Did you kind of, how did you process it?
Firstly, I'm really sorry about your friend. I think that is awful, isn't it? It's, you know, life's so precious, and it's hard to know how to help people, isn't it? But you will be helping. Just know that, you know, just your presence and you being there and you supporting is so much more than you can even imagine. You don't have to say a lot. Do you know, just being there means more than anything in the world, and you'll do that well. I'm sure you will. So don't ever think that what you're doing isn't enough, because it is.
Oh, that is really, really comforting to hear, because
it's hard. It's hard supporting people grieving.
Oh, it's so hard.
It is.
Yeah,
it is.
It's really so hard.
I'm really feel for you. So, but you know, don't doubt yourself, because you know you'll be an amazing support.
Oh, thank you. I would love to get into that a bit further on, actually, sure, about how you could help people on the outside of the grieving process, how to support people who are grieving, because it feels like such a helpless situation.
It does.
Sometimes.
It does, definitely.
Yeah.
But going back to the question, how I felt initially, I don't know, in all honesty. I was in shock. I desperately wanted to see him. I needed to see him to believe it. It was a Sunday, and I was just like, I need to see him. You've got to take me to him. And they couldn't, because it was a Sunday and he'd gone to the coroner's office because he had to have a post-mortem, and you can't get in. There's no access of a weekend. And I was just like, no, you don't understand. You know, it's like, I have got to see him. I'm glad I didn't now, because obviously when they go for post-mortem, they leave all the resuscitation stuff on them, and it wouldn't have looked like him. And I think it would have been quite distressing. But at the time, I just needed to be with him. And I think practically I was just like, right, I've got to sort my kids out, and I've got to tell his mum, and I need to let people know. And you go into this panic of, how am I going to do all these things? It doesn't sink in. You don't understand it.
How did your kids? How did you
take it? My eldest, I think they knew something was going on. I didn't let the police into the house, not in a horrible way, but I just, when Mark came to the house and told me, it's funny because we've got gates on the drive, and I saw him by the gates, but he was on his own and he didn't have his helmet on. And I was like, what's going on? And you know, and you're just like, this isn't normal. Where's Simon? They went on a bike ride together. So I went onto the drive, and as I approached Mark, I just walked. I just knew, and I went, "Is he dead?" And Mark just put his hands over his mouth and went, "I'm so sorry." I could just see it in his eyes, and he just went, "I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry." I went, "Are you joking? Is he dead?" And then I just went back into the house. The girls were like, why is Mark here? Because they knew he'd gone out with Mark on the bike ride. And I was like, oh, don't worry. I just need to get my phone. I'm just going to phone Nanny, my mum.
Yeah.
I grabbed my phone, went back outside. I phoned my mum and I went, Mum, Simon's dead. You need to get here now.
Oh,
what
God.
An awful phone call to make. Yeah. Like, who does that?
Well, I was in such a of course you were. Yeah.
And my poor mum. So I hung up, and Mark was like, the police are here. They need to speak to you. And I was like, oh, I don't want them to come into the house. I knew I didn't want my children to remember that day as the police kind of being sat in the house, you know? So I went out. There's a grass verge in front of my house and spoke to them there. And then my mum turned up, and then my sister turned up, because my mum phoned my sister. So by the time I went back into the house, it had all gone a bit weird, and the kids knew something wasn't quite right. So I when I went back in, and my mum and my sister were here, and I said, look, I'm just going to have to tell them. I've got to tell them now. And I took them into the front room. I sat them down on the sofa. They were 9 and 5. And I said, look, girls, I'm really, really sorry to have to tell you this, but Daddy has died on his bike ride. His heart stopped beating. They tried to get it beating again, but they couldn't. And he is now dead. I think because I was a nurse and a midwife, I knew the words I used were really important, and I had to be clear about what I was saying. I didn't want to say, oh, he's passed away, or he's gone to sleep, or do you know what I mean? Anything
that could lead kind of wrong.
Yeah. So it sounded harsh, and saying those words just goes against every fiber of your being, telling your sweet, innocent children their dad is dead, and not words that comfortably kind of come out of your mouth, you know?
Of course.
And you just feel like, oh my God, my 9-year-old just sobbed her heart out. She just completely and utterly broke down. My 5-year-old just said, oh, I'll go and get some of his clothes and they'll make you feel better. And kind of went to go upstairs to get some of Simon's clothes to bring back down for her.
Yeah.
My mum kind of collared her on route, and they got a teddy, I think. And my 9-year-old just sobbed and sobbed and sobbed. And I just held her. And she stopped crying eventually. And they kind of then picked back up. It's really weird. I now know that they say that children puddle jump in and out of grief, that they are so deep in it in a moment, and then literally in another moment they're out laughing, jumping around, playing as normal. And you're a bit kind of like, what? Hang on, I'll keep up.
Yeah.
So that, and then my brother-in-law took them to the park. Whilst I went and told my mother-in-law, and he said, you know, they kept asking to look at pictures of him on his phone. They were like, have you got any pictures of my daddy? Can I see some pictures? But it's a situation that you know nothing about, isn't it? And you just think, God, what do I do? It was a Sunday. They were supposed to be going to school on the Monday. And I was like, what do I do? Do I send them to school? Do I keep them at home? Luckily, my sister got in touch with Winston's Wish, the charity for bereaved children. And remarkably, I think somebody was around on a Sunday. I don't really remember, but they said, keep routine, keep everything as normal as you can.
Okay.
Send them to school on Monday. You know, if they go to clubs, if they anything, just keep everything as normal as you can. So on the Monday morning, my mum went into the school to tell them what had happened, and the school then told the rest of the school that, you know, and then my children went in at break time. So they were at home until sort of 10-ish. And then they went in on their normal day. And they went in every day since. And do you know what was so lovely with the school? Because children find it hard, don't they, to communicate and say how they feel. Mm. They gave them a little laminated picture of a house. And they gave them one each. And they said, if you ever want to go home, you don't have to say anything. Just show me this picture. Bring it to me and I will phone your mummy and she will come and get you and take you home. And that comfort for me, you know, knowing that my children didn't have to feel uncomfortable or worried about saying anything, that they could just literally get this card out and show it to someone and go home. It was so, so reassuring, you know, because you worry about them, you know, their lives have been torn apart and you're sending them to school. It's like, oh, maybe with me.
Dad, and it's heartbreaking, the thought of it.
Yes, it is.
Kind of, have they used their pictures of the laminated pictures of the house?
Not once.
Have they not? That's good.
And I wonder whether it was a bit of a, they knew they could if they wanted to.
Yeah.
They didn't need, do you know what I mean?
It was the reassurance they kind of, yeah, you know, needed, just knowing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's it. They had a day off for their funeral, because that was on a Friday. Other than that, they went to school every single day.
Wow. Well, fair play to them and fair play to you as well for being able to continue structure and routine. And
yeah.
What about you? How did you navigate that kind of first night, few days, first few weeks?
Do you know what? I was so lucky. I live in a town with my family still. I've got my mum, my dad, and my sister. Simon's mum lived nearby as well. All my old school friends. I've always, you know, placed a huge importance on friends and family in life. They're just so, so dear to me. And thank God, because they literally picked us up and carried us for a couple of months. I had somebody staying with me every night for a couple of months. Friends and family would rotate. My sister took over and just set up this routine, this structure, this timetable of people that would come and stay with me. My dad would drive me anywhere I wanted to go. He didn't work for a fair few weeks. My mum and my sister, I think everyone had 2 or 3 weeks off work, in all fairness.
Wow.
It's invaluable. You just have no idea. Just, yes, you get irritated by people. Yes, sometimes people say things that knock you, but my God, I'd rather that than nothing, you know? And I just took it as it came, you know, and I reached out and I asked for support when I needed it. People fed me. The school set up a meal planning system. I don't know how long it went on for. I can't remember, but I was sent home with meals every day. The teachers and the parents all took it in turns. They delivered it to school at when they came to pick up their kids at the end of the day. And I would then pick it up from reception and take it home and feed my children.
That is so thoughtful.
Honestly, isn't it? Because it's those practical things. You know, somebody would come and cut my grass. Somebody would come and clean my house. Somebody would do my food shopping. It's those things that you can't figure out. You can't do. And it just keeps you going, you know, because, of course, then you're planning a funeral and you've got all the will stuff and you're just thrown into this mayhem, aren't you?
And was there anything else other than those kind of practical things that you found to be really helpful or supportive during that time?
I think having Winston's Wish there to help me with my children and their grief was huge. I would recommend anyone to get in touch with a bereavement charity for your kids, because the ideas that they give you, the guidance they give you, you know, because then your children start to ask you questions like, well, what happens if you die? What are you going to die, mummy? Do you know what I mean? And you're like, instinctively, you want to go, no, I promise, I'm never going to die. I'm not going to leave you. But you can't. You can't say that. So they guide you on all that kind of stuff as well. So that was huge. The school support. I think people just picking me up and carrying me. I did join, I can't remember at what point I joined Widowed and Young. I tried to find other widows, because you know, and you're like, oh God, I need to speak to someone else.
Of course, absolutely. That was a question I wanted to ask you. Did you want to kind of seek out other people in the same situation?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Because you're just like, oh God, has this happened to anyone else? And then all of a sudden you're like, oh my God, this happens loads. You know, this lovely, sweet little innocent bubble I was happily living in, had no idea of how many people were widowed young.
So it would be helpful to understand, how do you find those people?
Some of it was through friends of friends and stuff. You know, somebody would say, I mean, I actually went to my GP for a check-in, and he said, I know somebody that was widowed young with three kids, and he put me in touch with her. There was somebody that used to be a midwife that people at work knew and said, do you want to reach out and meet her? So I talked to her, and you know, friends of friends that would go, somebody I know somebody who, do you see what I mean? And people come out the woodwork and go, oh, I know someone that knows someone. Do you want to speak to them? And I was just like, yeah, to everyone, you know.
What stage were you at when you were ready to do that? I'm just wondering, like, when is, yeah.
Quite early on, actually. Quite early on, because I needed... whether that's just a little bit about who I am or what, I don't know, but I wanted answers to questions that are unanswerable, but you don't know that at the time. I wanted to know how long I was going to feel bad for, what was going to happen next. You know, when will these feelings go away? When will I be better? What's it like? What do I have to do? How are your children coping? Are your children okay? Am I going to be okay? Am I going to be, do you mean, am I going mad? Is this normal? Are these thoughts okay? Am I a really bad person? Or, you know, and because you do, people say things, and you get to a point where you don't understand anything. You don't understand anything.
And your whole world as you knew it has been completely flipped upside down and shattered. Yes. Yeah, so I can, like, without any warning whatsoever.
That's it. And it's not even just the person that died. You know, you've got your primary loss of the person that has died, but you've got all the secondary losses that come with it. You know, that the life that you had has gone, the life you were going to have has gone, the person that you were is going to go. Do you mean it changes you fundamentally? Finances, holidays, intimacy. Do you know what I mean? Like, the secondary losses to losing a life partner are huge. And they're endless. It affects every single corner of your universe. There's not one area of your life that isn't affected by losing a partner like that. And you don't know how to figure that out. You know, you're not taught this stuff, are you?
Yeah, that's really interesting, the secondary losses. I'd never kind of thought about it like that, but that makes a lot of sense. It's kind of, there's so many different avenues and aspects to the loss, to the grief.
Yeah. Absolutely. Huge ones, you know, that you have to grieve and work your way through as well.
And was there a group for young and widowed?
Yeah. So, I went along to some crews, bereavement counselling for widows. But actually I found that, I'm not sure how helpful I found it, if I'm honest. I think that started in the sort of end of December, January time after Simon died, so about 3 months after. I went along, but thing is, when you're in that place, you're not able to take on anyone else's stuff. Mm. So when you go into a group of people that are grieving, it almost just takes more out of you than gives you anything, because it's like, I can't deal with all of your stuff as well as my stuff, because I'm just so deep in it at the moment, you know?
Of course.
It was okay. I then found, discovered, I don't know how, somebody told me about Widowed and Young, the peer group, the support group for people under 50. That are widowed, and I mean, they've got a huge following on Facebook. So I joined WAY, they call it, Widowed and Young, and connected with people. In some respects, that was helpful. In some respects, it wasn't, because there were people in there that were quite positive and upbeat and wanted to share, you know, that yes, it's horrendous, but there is light in a dark place. There were others that were kind of in there that clearly had not been able to find that light. And they were maybe 8-10 years down the line, and they would post things like, oh, I'm 8 years in and I'm still devastated. My life is awful. I've never gotten over it. And I'm so sad. And you think, oh my God.
Yeah, this is not reassuring. Yeah.
No, you're like, I can't do this for 8 years.
Yeah.
So there was, you know, two sides to that as well. But you know, you do meet people that are fairly positive or more positive about their grief journey than others. And I did get some comfort in that. You know, I needed to see that, to hear that you worry when you're in that place that it's permanent because you can't see a way out of it. You're just like, I'm never going to get over this. How am I going to get over this? That's my husband.
And how has it, like, if you could try and describe what grief has felt like to you or how you've experienced it? Like you said that the kids, it's like jumping puddles. Is that what you said?
Yeah, puddle jumping, they call it. Yeah.
Puddle jumping. What would you say it's been like for you?
I would say it's been a huge roller coaster ride. You hit rock bottom. You know, there were times when I was literally on my kitchen floor wailing, and I know that sounds dramatic and I hate being dramatic.
It really doesn't sound dramatic in this circumstances at all.
I've had to phone people because I've been at home and my kids are here, and I'm like, I couldn't even speak. I was just like, you need to come. I couldn't physically get myself up off the floor and stop myself. It was horrendous. It was just horrendous. I don't even know how else to describe it. And I would call people. I just needed someone, you know, and you would cry yourself just to exhaustion until you just physically couldn't cry anymore. And they're the downs. But there were other times, you know, my husband introduced caravanning to the family, much to my despair. I was far more of a 5-star all-inclusive luxury kind of holidaying person. We had kids. And my husband was like, let's get a caravan. And I was like, are you kidding me? No. So he introduced caravanning holidays because that's what he did as a kid and with his family. And so we got one and I was like, okay, didn't really enjoy it. But I did get into it. And literally 2 or 3 weeks before he died, we just got back from 3 weeks in France in our caravan. We went to the same place every year. And I actually had really enjoyed that one. I was like, do you know what? This has been lush. The kids were a bit older. They're a bit more independent and they just loved it. So he died. And afterwards I was like, right, I'm talking 6 months. It was the winter. He died in September. We got through the winter. And I think sort of come March time, I just decided I didn't want that to end. That he brought that to the table and I wanted to continue that. The girls loved it. And in his honor. So I thought, right, okay, I'm going to have to sort this out. I need to learn how to tow a caravan. bearing in mind, you know, it was a big caravan. It still is a big caravan.
Good on you.
On a towing course with the caravan and, you know, camping club thing one weekend. And I went and learned how to do it. And the following weekend, a friend of mine's got a motorhome and we met in Burford, which is only 45 minutes down the road from where I live. But I just thought, okay, I need to get the caravan from A to B. And if I get stuck, I can call someone because I'm not driving anywhere ridiculous.
Yeah.
And I did it. And I remember doing it, setting up the caravan, unhooking it, and I felt invincible.
Amazing.
I was as high as a kite. I was like, oh my God, I'm amazing. I've got this. This is brilliant. Watch me go, you know? I was cock-a-hoop. We opened a bottle of Prosecco. We were celebrating. It was like, yes, us girls, you know, me and the girls, like girl power, Sutton girls. You know, it's just like, it was incredible. But then, of course, you come home from your weekend and the high and you come crashing back down again. Yeah. And you're on your knees and you're like, oh, my God, this is so hard. And it's like that, you know, you're up and down like a yo-yo and you've got to kind of learn to embrace the highs and work through the lows, and eventually you find some balance in it, because highs and lows aren't, you know, you can't live in either of those states, can you? They're not permanent states to live in. And you know, I craved balance eventually and worked towards that, and I did, you know, and eventually it it smoothed out a little bit. But it was a long roller coaster ride of ups and downs, you know. And initially the lows are long and deep and heavy. And slowly you work your way out of it. And it just takes time, you know, to work through those. I went to the GP and I did take some sleeping tablets, and I was on antidepressants for a year. After he died, I think 6 months after he died, I just reached a point where I couldn't cope anymore. So I did have some help with that because I couldn't get out of the low, you know, for about 4 weeks. I was stuck in it. I wasn't coming out of it. And so I did that. But then I came off them again and I figured it out. I figured it out. But I think a roller coaster ride just does sum it up. You know, people talk about waves of grief, don't they? Coming and knocking you off your feet, and then the waters settle. You know, all those analogies are very good descriptions of how it feels.
Yeah, because even I have to say, obviously, it's completely different than, you know, losing a partner and the parent of your kids. But I have lost a couple of friends in the last couple of years, and it's someone used the explained it as in grief creeping up on you to me before, and that resonates for me because it's like out of the blue, just a piece of music or just something, and I'm gone.
Yeah.
Like,
yes, absolutely. It's funny, isn't it? The things that get you, and music is so emotive, isn't it? You know, I remember being in a supermarket once and a song coming on, and I was, you know, it just gets you. And yeah. I just abandoned ship because I was like, I couldn't keep it together.
Yeah.
And it does creep up on you sometimes, you know, and you don't always know why either, do you? You know, sometimes you can pinpoint a trigger, and other times it does just get you. And I think friends are really hard because it's not as recognized as a loss as losing a family member or something, is it? You know, and friends are so important to us in lives. And I know Simon's best friend of old has hugely struggled losing it. It's a huge loss in life, losing a best friend, any friend.
Yeah, and I think it kind of flips everything on its head in a way, because you just don't expect to lose someone this young. So you kind of, it's kind of made me sort of look at everything and go, I cannot take anything for granted. I cannot take any person in my life for granted. I can't take the time that I have with them for granted. It's just like kind of a really scary wake-up call of how much we just don't know anything in terms of how much time we have with anyone, which is scary.
It is. Yeah. And
so how did you then get to the point of, you know, thinking about becoming a grief and loss coach? How did that all come about?
So 2.5 years after Simon died, I just felt completely lost. I'd kind of come out of the raw stages of it, and the girls and I were doing okay. You know, we'd been on holidays, and I'd taken them to Disney World and Lapland, and we'd had good times. But I just didn't know who I was, where I was heading, what I wanted. I just had so many questions. I didn't know how to answer them. And I wanted to make life better. I felt unfulfilled, but I didn't know how to fill myself back up. And I was chatting to some friends once in a coffee shop, like you do, and I was getting upset. And they were like, why didn't you get a job? Why didn't you go back to college? Why didn't you do this and get that? And I was just like, oh, none of that's really, just none of it was working for me. I hadn't gone back to work after Simon died, and I didn't want to go back to doing that. So somebody said to me, why don't you get a life coach? And I was like, a what? He said, a lot. I've never heard of a life coach. I was like, what does one of those do? And she said, well, I know someone I've met. He's a really nice guy and what have you. So I was a bit like, what? Anyway, I said, well, I'll speak to him on the phone. And I spoke to him on the phone, and he just, I don't know, it just felt positive and it felt right. It felt a little bit uncomfortable doing something that was, you know, going to cost me a good amount of money, that wasn't tangible, you know, and you don't know what results you're going to get from it. It's a bit like, well, how does this work? I don't understand. And what am I paying you for exactly? Yeah. You know? Anyway, I just thought, you know what? What have I got to lose? I've got nothing else floating my boat. I spoke to him and he seemed, you know, I got it. I got what he was saying. And oh my God, I've never looked back since. I signed up for 6 weeks. Within that 6 weeks, the difference was just unbelievable in me. So I signed up for 6 months, and I turned my life around. I changed my thoughts, my feelings, my behaviors, my outlook, my mindset, my perspectives. I lost weight. I got fitter.
This is very good PR for life coaching. I mean, it sounds completely transformational.
Oh my God. I understood who I was. I knew what I valued in life. I knew what was important to me. I started to challenge my thinking and you know, the stories you tell yourself are just crazy. It's like, well, you never challenge them. You never go, well, why am I thinking that? Why am I saying that in my head? Is that true? No, it's not. Have I got anything to back it up? No, I haven't. So where's it come from? Nowhere. It's rubbish. Get rid of it. Replace it with something else. Do you know? And look at the facts of your life and what you've achieved up to this point. And, you know, and just the words we use in our head and how we think about things. It's amazing. And when you really start to take notice and create that awareness around what you're doing and what you're saying, you really start to notice the rubbish that comes out of your mouth. It's just like based on ridiculous beliefs you've picked up from, yeah, I don't know, society or other people's ridiculous beliefs. You know, not I'm putting other people down, but we all do it.
Absolutely. I completely agree that being aware of our kind of thought patterns and how they can absolutely go against us is
massively
really powerful.
Huge. You know, our thoughts are connected to our feelings and our feelings are connected to our behavior. So you've got to start with your thoughts, right? You know, otherwise you're not going to kind of change anything.
Yeah.
And I really realized how damaging a lot of mine were and just it's not true either. So I kind of just woke up in this time and, like you say, transformed my life. I've never looked back. It just bought me so much. My life was richer and I was doing things that I was pushing myself. I was achieving things. My confidence was growing. I was gaining clarity on what I wanted from life and how I was going to get it. And I just thought, do you know what? I've figured all this stuff. I've done all this work. I can't not share it. You know, people were noticing and they were like, what are you doing? And what's happened? And how are you doing it? You look amazing. You know, and I was kind of talking to them. People wanted to know more. And I just thought, people don't know about this stuff. It's not out there enough. So I thought, oh, do you know what? I'm going to look into this. And I looked into going and doing some coaching courses. I started off as a breakup and bereavement coach, you know, because people were going through divorces. And as much as they're very different, sometimes the feelings you're left with after it are quite similar, that feeling lost and not knowing where you're heading and what you want from life. But obviously, naturally, I was attracting widows. That's my story. And people resonated with my story. And that's my truth. That's who I am. That's what I've been through. And there's so little support out there for widows. You know, that there's peer groups and stuff. And you've got counselling, which is brilliant. I had some in my time and it definitely had its place. But you get to a point where you're like, right, what do I do now to help me move forward? How do I take control of my life and make it work for me, you know? And it's that's missing.
And so what would an example be of how, if somebody comes to you and they have obviously just lost their partner, how would that look like, their work with you?
So it depends where people are in their journey. Some people, you know, quite early on, sometimes they just want a space to offload in, to share their truth in, to know that what they're feeling, what they're thinking is normal, it's okay, and to give them the tools and the strategies that I've learned over time to help them get through it in a more positive way. You know, sometimes basics like sleep, nutrition, getting out in nature, moving your body, you know, the habits that you have in your day-to-day life, and it's bringing things like that in.
Yeah.
It's also, you know, it's the rebuilding of of your new normal and what you want that to look like, discovering who you are. You know, I have groups, I do group coaching and one-to-one coaching. Both have their place and both are amazing. And people get different things from the two ways of doing it. But essentially, it's doing everything that I did, you know, looking, diving deep, you know, focusing on them. People don't do that. People don't do that. We just carry on this hamster wheel of life, doing everything that we believe to be right. And why? Where's that come from? It's often not right. It's something you've picked up along the way. So it's almost unlearning what you thought you knew about grief and learning a new way, a way that can help you do it in a far more positive way, so that you can build a life around it. And you can take it forward with you far more peacefully and far more lightly, you know, but still taking your loved one with you and honoring them and their life, so you don't feel like you're leaving them behind.
Yeah. And do you have any way to do that with your kids? Are there any kind of nice suggestions about how people can honor their loved one?
Yeah, I think it's really important to talk about them. I think it's really important to remember them for the good and the bad. Really important to do that. You know, me and my children often talk about how grumpy Simon was and when he told them off and, you know, like the negatives as well as the positives. I don't believe in putting people up on pedestals. Memory boxes are amazing. First aid kits for the inside was something I learned from Winston's Wish, which was a brilliant tool in terms of figuring out what, you know, when they're feeling sad, what things can they do to help them feel better on the inside, you know, and sitting down and doing that with your children. And sometimes they want to feel connected to their parents, and you can go and get the memory box out, you know, or the memory jar, something you've made, you know, something tangible, pictures, their jewelry, anything you've got of them. You can put on music that reminds you of your person, you know. Sometimes you've got to throw yourself into it, and I think having something accessible to get to for everyone is really important, you know, having pictures up around the house, and just your children. They might not open up, they might not always talk about it, but I think it's, you know, by you showing the way, leading the way, you know, you talking about it, knowing that they can always come to you to talk if they want to, you know, there's a safe space there, and letting them see your range of emotions. Don't hide anything from them. I mean, yes, when you're lying on the kitchen floor and you can't get up, they probably don't want to see that. But, you know, they can see you upset. They can see you when you're a bit angry. And sometimes I used to have conversations with family and friends around my children so that they understood what was going on without having to have the actual conversation with me, if that makes sense. They could hear it, but not have to be involved in it. I think you have to be really honest. I think you have to be really honest with them. At all times, because you know, it's like what we're going through is confusing and overwhelming and horrible, and we don't understand it. So, you know, you imagine that for a child, and if we share with them how we're feeling and what's going on, they might not give you anything back, but, you know, inside they just might be thinking, okay, yeah, I felt a bit like that. Maybe that's okay. Mum felt like that too, or dad felt like that too, you know? I'm a huge advocate of honesty and openness and just, do you know what? I think the biggest thing is you don't have to be two parents to your children. You are enough. Yeah. You being you, you being loving and supportive and there for them is absolutely enough. You don't have to be both. And I think we often put ourselves under that pressure of, oh my God, I've got to be mum and dad. I've got to do everything he was going to do and teach them everything he was going to teach them and be that person. You can't. That's not a realistic thing to put on yourself. You can't be that person. You are you and you are enough. And just love them, you know, just let them know how much you love them and you're there for them and they're safe with you. And that's what they need. That's what they need, children. They need time with you.
Yeah.
One of the best things that I did was giving them each individual time, even if it was only 10, 15 minutes a day. It's time with them, you know, where you're not distracted by anything else. And that helps hugely. That's all they want. That's all they want is your time and your love. Give them that. you're going to be doing all right.
Wow. And can I ask, Karen, if you were to go back in time to when it first happened, what would you kind of say to that person who was dealing with all of that back then in 2016 when it happened? What would you say to yourself?
I would say, hold on tight. it's going to be a really bumpy ride, but you are going to find your way through this. Be patient, be kind to yourself, and just take small steps, baby steps if you have to. If you don't want to do anything on a particular day, don't worry about it. Don't beat yourself up for it. You know that another day will come where you will feel more in control of it. It's going to be up and down, but you are going to be okay. You know, it's always going to be there. You're always going to carry it, but it won't always feel so heavy. Just trust in you. You know, at the beginning, I was very much, I can't do this. I can't do it. It's too awful. But you can do it and you will do it. You've just got to figure it out.
Oh, God, I feel like I need to have a cry after this episode. It's been really, really amazing to hear your story, to hear how you've spoken, so kind of honestly about it, and how you got yourself and the kids kind of, through it, and to hear about what you're doing now, which is supporting other people in the process. And I just hope that for anybody listening that is experiencing grief and going through it, that this will be kind of, a comfort, knowing that it does get easier in time.
Yeah, absolutely. It does. And, I'm 4.5 years down the line now. It's been a very bumpy road. I still have days where I feel sad and I miss Simon, and it's difficult, but I'm happy. I'm really happy in life. I love life. I'm fulfilled. I'm aligned. I know what I want. I know where I'm heading. I have a passion and a purpose. And I'm doing good. I never thought I'd get to this point, but it's far exceeded my expectations. And life is a beautiful thing. It can sometimes throw curveballs at you. But things change, things become different, but that doesn't always mean it's going to be bad. It can be good.
Karen, thank you so much. I have really enjoyed talking with you, and you are completely inspirational. And I love that there's such a positive, there's such a positive message in your story and in where you are and where you are in your life. So thank you so much for sharing it with us.
Thank you for letting me. I love it. I think it's, I love what you do. Thank you for asking me along. I think these support networks are so important to people. And I think it's wonderful that you do what you do. So thank you for having me.
Thank you. And we would love to get you on for another virtual meetup session on the app when you have time.
Anytime. I'd love to. Absolutely.
And Karen, where can listeners find you?
So I'm on Facebook, I'm on Instagram, and I'm on LinkedIn, Karen Sutton Widow Coach, @KarenSuttonWidowCoach. And I've got a website as well, karensutton.co.uk. You can find me there.
Perfect. Karen, thank you so much. And thank you everyone for listening. Until next time.
If you would like to connect with other single parents in your area, as well as a wider community of single parents, and access support and advice easily, download the Frollo app and join us. Otherwise, head to our website, www.frollo.com, and sign up to our newsletter to stay connected to us. All the links are in the show notes. To help us reach more single parents, it really helps us when you subscribe to this podcast and leave us a rating and review. So we would be really grateful if you could take a minute to do so. You've been listening to Frollo, the Single Parent Podcast, and I really hope you enjoyed this episode. Until next time, have a great week.